Welcome to the Pongcast, keeping you in the loop for all things table tennis.
That is unbelievable.
And thanks for joining me on this episode of the Pongcast. Last week, it was focused on the World Table Tennis Championships as it took place. I talked to top Australian player William Hensel just as he was about to play, and also discussed the early results. So now it's the following week. The 2011 World Table Tennis Championships have finally concluded, and we have new world champions. So we will be discussing how it all went down, and by we, I mean myself and Jackson Maine, who's joining me as a special guest co-host from PrimetimePingPong.com. And he has his own table tennis podcast there, so we decided to join forces for this special event. Now, in the U.S., ESPN is our major sports network, but I'm pretty sure they didn't spend a single second mentioning it, much less any discussion, analysis, or follow-up to the event. And I figured, they won't do it, so why not us? At least somebody should. So we did our own kind of fan-driven perspective, a Monday morning quarterback talk of the World Table Tennis Championship, so to speak. And there's a lot to cover. Extra long episode here, and I don't want to waste any more time, so let's get some news. Just a quick bit of news for me. Hopefully you're listening to this in time. And if you're listening to this before May 25th, the US Open has extended its deadline until that day, so if you haven't done so already, you have until May 25th to send your entry forms in. Now, I have Jackson joining me, as I said, so he did me the favor of keeping up on the news, and I'll let him take it from here.
So the next stop on the ITTF Pro Tour is the Brazil Open from the 9th to the 12th of June. I don't think the draws come out yet, but notable players that I noticed in the entry list for the men's is Jan-Michael Save. Dmitry Ovcharov is leading the German contingent. I don't think Timo's entered, and Thiago Apolonia from I think, like I mentioned, from Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
Those seem to be some of the higher ranked players that I've seen, and with the women's entries. I didn't really recognize any of the names from previous tournaments, but I wrote down the top seed. The top seed is Wang Yu Ju from Singapore. Mm-hmm. So that's that tournament. That's, Brazil. Any thoughts on that?
Well, Brazil, that'd be a great place to play, a great country to visit and get some table tennis in. But, that's good to look forward to. Ultroff is also one of the more entertaining players, so I'll probably be rooting for him. And hopefully ITTF covers that online and we get to watch some matches there.
Yeah, I dare say that they will. It's a Pro Tour event, and I think they get most of those online, so that'll be good.
Great.
And then a bit more locally, we've got the Australian Open and Youth Championships going on simultaneously on the 11th to 17th of June. That's in Hobart in Tasmania. I don't think there's any entry. I haven't come across any entries lists for that, but I dare say our friend William Hensel will be there.
Excellent. And
I definitely think so. And even more locally, just within my state, the Brisbane Open is on the 4th to the 5th of June. Hensel will be there. I think that Brisbane Table Tennis has an arrangement with him. He comes up and does some coaching courses.
Oh, that's great.
During the weekend, and I'm not sure what the rest of the arrangement is, but you'd expect that he'd probably be a lock to win that tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually playing open doubles with Jake Duffy from my club. He's the current Australian under 13 champion, so that'll be good fun to watch as well.
Whoa! So this kid is like 12 years old or something.
Yeah, I think he's turned 13 just last month, and yeah, so late last year he was Australian under 13 champion.
Oh wow!
So they'll be playing open doubles together. So that'll be good to watch.
They're very entertaining. What a matchup! Very interesting to see them run around.
I think so. And then last but not least is at least in Australia, it's still a couple of months away, but it's really, really, I think a massive step forward for table tennis in Australia. the Oceania Cup, 20th to this 22nd of July in Adelaide. And I'm not sure about the entrance list again there, but William Hensel is in again, and also another interviewee of mine, Sarah Hurley, will be representing New Zealand there. And yeah, so that entire tournament, it's just fantastic. I really think it's a part of, as a three-way agreement between ITTF, the Oceania Table Tennis Federation, and TMS International, which you'll know probably provide. But from providing the coverage that we're used to on ITTV.
Mm-hmm.
So the agreement between those three has attracted a lot of coverage. There's going to be coverage on Fox Sports in Australia, and has also attracted Adidas as a major sponsor. So really, really excited about that. And so that's been really great work there from a couple of guys, I think Australians, in the ITTF ranks. There's Glenn Tepper, who's the ITTF Executive Director for Development, and also ITTF Marketing Director is Steve Dayton. Both of those guys are from Australia. And also for Oceania Table Tennis, there's Scott Houston, who I've interviewed. He's a Development Officer for Oceania Table Tennis Federation. So great work from those three guys, and really looking forward to that tournament. Great step forward for Australia, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You should be thrilled about that, and that's great. You're getting it on TV too, as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm upset. I'm upset that I don't have Foxtel to watch it.
yeah.
But hopefully, with TMS, you know, we'll get a decent amount on ITTV, so that'll be good.
Or better yet, hopefully, maybe a local bar will have it. You can go down there and watch it, and hopefully, a lot of other people will be watching it. Maybe
that would be fantastic. Yeah, I'm sure it would.
All of my heroes are table tennis players. Zoran Primorac, Jan-Ove Wagner, Wang Tao, George Rushkoff, and of course Ashraf Helmy. I even have a life-size poster of Hugo Hoyam on my wall. And the first time I left Pennsylvania was to go to the Hall of Fame induction ceremony of Andre Gruba.
Jackson Main, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you, Jason. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on. You run a very successful table tennis podcast, really the only other audio table tennis podcast, so we're in a small little group, but I'm glad we could collaborate on this.
Yeah, I definitely am as well. It's going to be great. It's like we mentioned before the interview, it's probably one of the first times that anyone's ever done something like this, so I'm really happy to be here. It's great.
Yeah, sounds good. So before we start, you know, it's kind of funny, you've done a lot more episodes than I have. I've only done two, but people might not be really familiar with us from what our perspectives are, where we're coming from. So, yeah. And I don't know about yourself. I know you briefly mentioned about yourself on the website, but maybe we can just learn a little more. So how did you actually get involved in table tennis to start with? Like, what made you pick up the sport?
Well, my stepdad was kind of into it, not seriously, but before I was, before, you know, he got involved with my family. And I think I got a table for my 12th birthday, and that was it for me. Like, it was just him and I in our garage playing for, you know, quite a few years. And then what sparked me to find a club and get into serious table tennis was the 2008 Beijing Olympics. You know, I was pretty competitive in our matches in the garage, so I thought that if I could play like those guys on TV, then I could kick his ass. So. So that's when I found a club, and from there, yeah, it was probably a good another maybe would have been a good good year or so before I got into like serious coaching and going numerous times a week.
Uh-huh.
But yeah.
And I saw you mention, are you're actually in training to become a coach? Is that right?
I am. Yeah. Yeah, I've done. I'm not sure what the coaching structure is like in America, but there's. There's different levels of coaching qualification in Australia, so I've pretty much got my level one coaching certificate for table tennis.
Oh, okay.
In Australia. So that yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just
cool.
One sort of kind of theory exam away from completing that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Congratulations ahead of time.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah, it's funny how you bring that up, because I also started playing with my father at my local community center when I was like. A lot earlier, I guess, like 9 or something. And then it wasn't even serious, and you're sitting around, and I had fun. And I was like you, I wanted to beat my dad really badly. That was like the challenge as we played more and more. And I guess one day, out of nowhere, I didn't even know, my father got me a coach. And at first I wasn't really crazy about it. I was like, well, this is a little jumping into the water or something. But I got a coach, and that's where I started playing pretty seriously as a junior up until like 13, which I briefly mentioned on my first episode. And I guess I was pretty decent. I was bouncing in and out of the top 10 for my age group and played Junior Olympics and stuff like that.
And this is in all of the USA, is it?
Yeah, in the US, yeah. But it's a lot different now. I mean, every year the competition gets more and more and better players. So I guess at the time when I was coming up, it was not as, you know, fierce, the competition. Not as many juniors playing. So, but anyways, yeah, I kind of stopped when I was like 13, 14, when I was about to start high school. I figured, well, this is kind of a hard thing to do, to be a pretty serious table tennis player. I figured I'd rather, you know, focus on school. And then when I went to college, on a whim, I stopped by the local club and picked it up again, and been playing ever since. So, but yeah, it's funny. We both had the kind of same beginnings, I suppose. So, okay, good to know. And I'm just curious, like, how often do you play during the week? You get to play a lot?
I'm probably at my club, probably 4 or 5 times a week. I think probably two of those sessions are coaching, like training.
Uh-huh.
And the rest is playing matches and or playing socially. But when I play socially, I try to find people that I can do drills with. So I'm sort of training, even though there's not like a structured training going on. So yeah.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. For the past like 3-4 years, I only was able to play like once a week, and then in the past few months, I have access to another club, so I was able to play 3 times a week, and now I'm actually able to play 4 times a week. So it's a big change for me. But that's great; you get to play so much table tennis.
Yeah, it's same for you. I'm really impressed with the college system over there as well. Like, there's, you know, it seems like a really good setup, and that. And I listen to your interview over there with what was your position?
Yeah, Will Laparola. Yeah, he was the president of the NCTTA.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks. And Australia, is college table tennis? Is there organized college table tennis or not?
No. There's a university games on. I'm not sure even if it's on every year. Like, it gets almost no coverage. So like, but there's a university up north that has a table tennis club.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much the only university I know that's got like dedicated table tennis tables, you know. But it's definitely sounds like a better, more organized thing in the U.S. anyway.
Okay, I guess that's one thing we're doing all right at. So, anyways, we decided to collaborate here and do a review of the World Table Tennis Championships, and we're at, like we just mentioned, we couldn't be further apart. I'm in the U.S. and you're in Australia. But
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, thanks to the power of the internet, and we can do a podcast, and we can do this together. So, so let's get started. What do you think?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Okay, so to start with, like, I assume you watched it on the ITTF website, like I did.
Yeah, I sure did. I'm not sure where else you can watch it.
I'm not sure. I figure maybe some other countries were privy to it. I actually saw some YouTube highlights of it. And it had some kind of Middle Eastern writing. I don't know. Maybe it's like Al Jazeera. So some countries are actually broadcasting it. So
okay.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. I just noticed it today. So yeah. So what did you think about the ITTF broadcasts?
Yeah, well, I was really pleased with it overall. There was only one time when I was trying to sort of get into the site to watch Timo Boll's semifinal.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get in, so I was like frantically clicking refresh.
Yeah, bad timing for that to happen.
Try and get in there, but apart from that, I was you know, pretty impressed. And
yeah,
I liked a couple of times I saw the graphics come up with the reaction speed of a certain shot or the amount of revolutions put on a serve. So I'm not sure how they measured that.
Yeah,
but I was impressed with that.
Oh, really? I gotta say, I mean, I didn't get to watch a lot of matches in full. I never even got to see that.
I only saw it a couple of times. So, yeah, you really had to be, like, sort of watching at the right time, I think, you know. There was that. And, you know, like you said, isn't it kind of funny, like, the more time that I've spent sort of doing the interviews and doing the site, because I love table tennis and I want to build a site sort of around table tennis,
mm-hmm.
I've probably done less watching of actual matches. I don't know if you've found the same thing with yourself.
Yeah, it's a little more time-consuming, I guess, focusing on this. Actually, in a weird way, it actually made me watch more because I wanted to have some something to comment on and more seriously follow the world of table tennis. I felt it's a shame. I know maybe people I run into at my club or in the table tennis community, they don't really pay attention to the high level pros, and I figure it's kind of a shame. We want our sport to be popular, and our own players don't watch it at the pro level. So that's also kind of what inspired me to do a podcast. So
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. So, and I was grateful ITTF does this thing, because before they had this streaming on the website, right? I mean, we have no clue what's going on, had no access to watch it. And so I was grateful that ITTF starts doing it. And I don't even know, did they do this 2 years ago? Streaming online? They probably did. Do you have any idea about that?
I think 2 years ago, I didn't even know there was a World Table Tennis Championship.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
I think they might have done it. And even if they did, I'm almost positive they didn't have announcers or commentators. So I thought that was very cool they did that.
And they certainly had a lot more commentary this year. I noticed group matches and that, I think, had commentators, whereas even earlier this year and last year, there mm-hmm. was not much of that. Only the finals got commentary. So
they're also definitely
improving.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Helps make it more entertaining. Besides just hearing the crowd noise, it's a little quiet in between points. So, did you have any comment? I mean, what did you think about the commentators? Did you enjoy that? I know one pair, and I'm not sure if I got these right. I think one pair that mostly teamed up was Don Parker and Richard Krause, who is the former German coach. And I like that group. They were, especially hearing Richard Krause, his insight was really great. It was very entertaining, and especially coming from him who coached the German team. I found that very, very useful.
Yeah, he was definitely fantastic. I like probably his commentary the most. I don't know the names of any of the other guys, so I'm not sure who he was commentating with at the time of some of the matches that I watched.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's definitely very knowledgeable about tactics and sort of can analyze as the match is going on, especially he knows Timo Boll's game very well, being German as well. But yeah, I was really impressed with him and his analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't because probably English is not his first language. It was a bit difficult to understand some of the things he was saying. I'm still trying to figure out what upspin is and what downspin is, which is which. But definitely Richard and there was a couple of English commentators. I'm not sure their names though, but they seem to do quite well as well.
Yeah, there's one commentator I know people mention. I think the guy was John Burgess. And who might seem not very knowledgeable, but I saw some people online kind of criticize him. And the truth is he didn't seem too knowledgeable. I think they brought him in. He probably is used to commentating on another sport. But I like his energy, and maybe he doesn't really know what's going on exactly. But I thought it was still entertaining. I like his energy, and it just brought more kind of color to the sport.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Yeah. So is John Burgess, is he English? I'm just trying to figure out what accents I heard and trying to sort of put, go on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think that was the English guy. And I, for one match, he was teamed up with Mikael Andersen, who is, I think, the former Dutch coach. I had a hard time remembering who teamed up with who regularly.
Something about the commentary that I read about on a couple of forums was that... especially on forums where there's a lot of defensive players, is that they were not very happy with some of the commentators because in a match against a defensive player, they were giving sort of more credit to the attacking player for winning points. And if the defensive player won a point, it's only because the attacking player made a mistake. I don't know if you've read any of that criticism or anything like that.
No, I didn't. Yeah, that's funny. Well... Yeah, I guess everyone has their kind of bias. I mean, I prefer shake-hand right-handed players, so I guess I can understand a little bit. But, I mean, that is the whole point, to make the opponent make a mistake. So, basically, isn't it, for defensive players? So, yeah, it's an interesting comment.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, there were one of the matches that I watched, I think it was the, could have been the quarterfinal, maybe, of the women's singles, Fan Ying versus Guo Yu. Hope I'm pronouncing those names right. But they seemed to do all right. Like, they gave Fan Ying, who was the defender, credit for, like, mixing up the different amounts of backspin that she was putting on the ball. So I was pretty impressed with the commentary in that match.
So let's go into the draw. Well, before I start, you mentioned watching women's events. I have to admit, I'm not particularly, I don't particularly follow the women's side. It's just so dominated by a lot of Chinese players. And, you know, the games, the matches are very entertaining, but it just, I don't have to say, I guess I was just more interested in men's singles. But you watched a decent amount of women's singles, and how did you find that?
Not really. I definitely watched more men's singles, I think. But, yeah, just if there was a women's match on, especially between an attacker and a defender, like, there seems to be more defenders at the top level in women's table tennis, that was, you know, good to watch. So, yeah, that one match I mentioned against between Fan Ying and Guo Yu,
mm-hmm.
was a really good one that I watched. I liked that a lot. And that went to seven sets, so that was pretty exciting. Yu ended up winning that one.
Okay, yeah, I want to look that up, because unlike you, I attackers versus defenders are very entertaining matches. And yeah. Do you have any interest in the doubles matches, women's doubles, men's doubles, mixed doubles? Did you bother watching any of those?
Yeah, in general, I find doubles matches hard to watch because there's a lot going on, and it's hard to sort of glean and take something away from the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not particularly interested. I mean, I don't play doubles much myself, and I don't feel, you know, I'm sure they want to be successful, but I think most players, their main goal is to be successful on the single side. So, and, you know, I'm not sure how much training they actually do for doubles. So, and I ask that in general just because I'm wondering the general audience, if anyone's paying much attention outside of men's singles, and I'm sure to a certain extent women's singles, but I don't know if a lot of people are really paying attention to doubles at all, even though there's actually more doubles events. So technically there's, you know, women's doubles, men's doubles, mixed doubles. So that's I was just curious about that. So actually, before the tournament started, specifically, I guess, like the men's singles, did you have a specific pick? I mean, somebody you were cheering for, hoping to win it?
I'm a pretty big Tim O'Boll fan, so I'm pretty biased towards him. I definitely wanted him to win.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people were, would like to see somebody else besides a Chinese player, just because it, you know, have a more diverse playing field. I'm sure a lot of people were cheering for Timo. I was cheering for Wang Lichen, who I guess is probably one of my favorite players, and I love his forehand. And I know he's getting old, and he's actually won a few championships already, but I just thought it'd put him in the, like, legendary status if he could win this, although I knew he was not a big favorite. But who did you feel? Did you have a general feeling of who you thought would win? I mean, I know you're cheering for Timo. Timo's actually a good pick to be a player to win, but general consensus, I felt a lot of people probably thought Wang Hao was probably the strongest player at the time.
Yeah, I definitely thought that probably he would win, or probably Xu Xin or Zhang Yike would probably be pretty close as well. And like you said, I had a soft spot for Wang Lequin as well, and also Ma Lin, having not won a world championships, would have been good to see him off, with completing the last sort of thing that he hadn't won in his career. But yeah, the Chinese young guns were sort of looking pretty good, even though, you know, I really wanted Timo to win and had a soft spot for those guys.
Yeah, that's a good point about Ma Lin. I mean, it could be his last chance. And although I'm not, like I said, I prefer to watch right-hand, shake-handed players, I mean, I can't deny how great Ma Lin has been. I love his third ball attack and his game over the table. That's a good point about Mullen.
And also, just what were on the doubles before as well. Like I don't really sort of make picks for who's going to win the doubles because I don't know who's paired with who. But there was a bit of news about Hao Shuai doing well in the Chinese team trials in the singles, but not actually getting chosen to play singles at the World Championships. So he was teamed up with Mu Zi in the mixed doubles, and I guess I would have liked to see him do well in the event that he, the only event that he got to play in the tournament.
So what happened? Did they win it? They didn't win it.
They lost the final to the other Chinese pair.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember briefly reading about it. I didn't really follow up on that too much, but that's a shame, I guess, to do so well. But that Chinese team is so loaded. I guess they went with experience and the young guns who are doing better overall recently.
Yeah, I guess they have their own reasoning for their picks. You know, even if a guy does really well in a team trials event, I guess they know, you know, who's going to do well when the actual event, you know, comes around. So it's, you know, it's hard to say.
Yeah, I guess it's a difference between facing, you know, I guess the Chinese team that I guess he's used to playing those guys, as opposed to playing, you know, in the World Championships where you're going to play a lot of players you probably don't have as much experience playing against. So I suppose coaches wanted to go with a safe bet. So let's go through the bracket. I was looking through the first round. Now, first of all, you're in Australia. Any Australian players any Australian players? I know that William Hensel was in there. Did they have any other representatives?
Yeah, he made the top 128. I think you reported that he got knocked out by Matinee from France in seven sets in that match. And I think the only other Australian that went well, actually went better than William, was Jian Fang Lei. She made the round of 64. I think she got beaten in six sets by one of the Dutch entrants. So yeah, she definitely had a great tournament, and probably was the best of the Australians, I think.
Yeah, the U.S. players, we had, our best chance was Fanny Young, who lost to William Hensel to qualify into the main draw, so that was our best chance. We did have two women, Lily Zhang and Ariel Singh, make it into the main draw, and they're pretty young, they're like 15, so that's a...
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, for U.S. table tennis, that's a really good progression. We're having younger players being more, you know, reaching a higher level or at an earlier age, so that was a huge success for us, so I was really happy to see that. And going through the first round, if you have any noticeable matches, I just want to bring up some guys that, especially in the U.S., we're familiar with, and actually international people will be familiar with. There's Sharath Kamal Achanta, who's a top Indian player, and, you know, he comes over to U.S. to play the U.S. Open and stuff, so I always like to see him do good. And but he was in the main draw, which is good, but he lost in the first round. I was also cheering for William Hensel, thankfully, for doing the interview. But like I mentioned, he lost to Adrian Matinee, who I think is a great player. And I wish I could have seen that match.
Yeah, that's the thing. Going back to the ITTV coverage, I just wish there would have been more matches, you know, that you could choose from.
Yeah, I maybe we're asking for too much, getting a little greedy. Provided they probably, there's very little streaming of live table tennis, only a few years ago. But I would have loved to see that match, and especially seeing it so close, and Matinee is such a great player, and entertaining player, and Hensel as well. So, too bad about that. And I saw you mention something on Twitter about some player going against Jean-Michel Save. Is that somebody you know?
Yeah, yeah. Gavin Rumgay. He's from England. Oh, actually, I think he's from Scotland. Yeah, I know of him through Barrow Table Tennis Club. I interviewed the team manager of Barrow Table Tennis. He was the first interview I did. He was like a text-based actually before I ever moved to audio. So that's where how I know him, and I watched that match, yeah.
Uh-huh. And that was a close match?
I think... did Rumgay win a set? I can't remember now. Yeah, I think
he won. Well, yeah, I remember because you did mention on Twitter, so I think it seemed like it was close at the moment. And I think it might have been very tied, like 1-1 or 2-2 in games, maybe.
Yeah, now that you mention it, I think it was close like that, and then save pulled away towards the end. But that's why I mentioned Rumgay. I think he's a good player, and he seemed to be playing well as well. The half of the match that I saw, it just saves a bit of a legend, I suppose.
I didn't see many big upsets in the first round. I mean, I guess it's to be expected. A lot of those guys are going through qualifiers to get into the main draw. But Christian Seuss, who's ranked 25th, he lost to a North Korean, who's ranked 79th. And Seuss, who I think has been doing pretty well, you know, internationally on the pro tour. I was a little bit surprised to see that, although I didn't get to see the match, so I was a little bit surprised.
Was that on ITTV?
I don't know. I was just going through the draw, and I remember later on looking back on who was still in the draw, and I realized Seuss was out. As I was looking, specifically, I was looking for German players that were still remaining, and I was surprised he got knocked out in the first round. So, a bit surprising. And I'll mention two more. Kind of, they're not U.S. players, but we're familiar with them. There's Thomas Kainit from I think he's from Slovakia. And he won the first round. Thomas Kainit, he comes over to U.S., plays quite a few U.S. tournaments, actually. So it was good to see him make it into win his first round match. And we also have Alexander Karakasovic from Serbia. And he lived in Chicago for a bit and represented Killerspin, which is a U.S. table tennis company. I'm not sure if he's still what he's doing right now, if he's still associated with that. But he played 7 games with Ju Se-hyuk, which I thought was very impressive. Anyone going 7 games with Ju Se-hyuk, I think it's impressive. So I thought it was good to see that. Any other first round matches you noticed you were surprised by?
Was it the first round, the close match that Ma Long had against Tokic? Was that first round?
Yeah, I thought it was the first round at the time, but I realized looking back that was the second round. So the second round. Did you get to see that match by any chance?
Yeah, I watched it last night, actually, just a replay of it, and it was an entertaining match. Tokic, he gets very animated after a long rally. It was very entertaining. He won the first set, and he could have been 2-up, I suppose. There was a long rally at 9-all, and then that he lost, and then he faltered the serve next point, so that was 11-9. Made it 1-all when he could have been 2-up. Do you have any comments on that match?
I totally agree. It was so close, and a lot of those games were very close, going to, like you said, 9-9. And Tokic, I mean, if you didn't know anything about table tennis, those guys look pretty even. I mean, going in, if you just look at the names, you probably think Ma Long's going to roll over this guy. But Tokic was hanging in there. They look very evenly matched, and you could tell... Tokic was very animated, which is very good to see. But Ma Long was also very animated, and that probably says a lot that he felt very threatened that Tokic was, keeping it very close. And very entertaining match, though.
Yeah, it definitely was. Tokic came back from 8-3 down to win the third as well. And I just think Ma Long's short game, like service return, just didn't start out that well. I think that's how Tokic got up in a couple of sets. Mm-hmm. But like I said before, he seemed to be winning. The longer the rally went, the more likely it seemed that Ma Long would win that particular rally.
What was impressive that they were actually having long rallies, first of all, and then Tokic was doing pretty good, like ending points kind of quickly. Like you mentioned that if the rallies went on longer, he'd be more in danger. But very surprising and very strong showing by him that he could, open up and put points away kind of quick before Ma Long got it.
He took Ma Long on backhand to backhand really well as well, I thought, and that's something that the commentators at the time said as well.
Oh yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I forgot about that. They were very close in that. So yeah, very strong backhand with Tokic. Very impressive. So I don't know if you have any other second round matches notable that I saw. Well, Juicy Hook beat Thomas Kynan, who I mentioned before. So I guess to be expected. Some bigger name matchups was Patrick Baum, who was ranked 21st, and he beat Zoran Primorac, who was ranked 39th at the time. And I mentioned the rankings at the time because the rankings were just updated after the World Table Tennis Championships. Baum took down Primorac. Primorac is 42 years old, getting older, but he's still hanging in there. Another interesting match was, I'm probably going to murder this name, but it's Panagiotis from Greece, I think.
I think that sounds fair enough to me. I'm not the name pronounced, but yeah.
Yeah. And ranked at 55th, and he beat Jorgen Persson, who is ranked 27th, 4-2. And Giannis, a very entertaining player to watch. Did you get to see some of his matches?
He's a defender, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't see that specific match against Persson, but I watched a little bit of him on YouTube. Playing other people in just other tournaments, and something I've heard from my coach is that no one wins a world championship without being able to beat a really, really good defender. So it's good that he's doing well and gets that variety in the game.
Good point with your coach too. Giannis, he's kind of that hybrid. I think he has long pips on the backhand, chops with the backhand, and then we'll try to do forehand loops, attack with the forehand basically, like Juseho. So that was good for him. And then Oh Sang-un, coming in ranked 11th, beat Jean-Michel Save, who was ranked 41, and also Save, getting a little older, up there in years, also 42 years old. Those were the big names I noticed in the second round. In the next round, I mentioned Adrian Madonnet, who, like I said, entertaining player. And he was doing really good at this tournament. He beat Gao Ning, who's ranked 16th from Singapore. One of the more interesting matches, I guess, maybe for the wrong reasons, Bastian Steiger, who's ranked 23rd from Germany. He beat, hopefully I get this right, Luong Chu-Yan, who is ranked 95th, from Hong Kong.
Okay, I didn't see that match.
What happened? So it was a bit controversial because the referees called Steiger probably two or three times on his service, and Steiger was very, very animated. I mean, it was going on for minutes. And I was a little bit surprised that the referee never kind of reprimanded him for his, like, outburst. But, literally, I think at one point he even, like, briefly got down on his knees and gave, like, a little prayer figure. To like praying to the referee to, you know, I guess he was very aggravated. And there's also one call that happened. Now, I'm not sure at what moment. I think it was like maybe 9-9. And the referee called another service error on Steiger. And that really blew it up. Steiger was, I don't know, that must have been delayed for, I want to say like 5 minutes. I mean, he was just walking around the court, complaining to the ref. Yeah, and I felt, I felt a little bad. I mean, the announcers kind of agreed with the referee, and if it's hard to tell, you know, these replays, you know, even you see from whatever angle they're coming from, it's hard to tell unless they're there. But I got to say,
that's exactly right. Yeah,
yeah.
I was just going to say that, like, from where the umpire is sitting, like, he can't possibly know whether the receiver can see the ball or not.
Right.
It's very subjective.
Yeah. Oh, actually, the main complaint. Well, I can't say actually. They might have been different reasons for each service error, but I think one of them was kind of Steiger tossing the ball into him.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I felt bad at a crucial moment. First, they called on Steiger, but maybe it was deserved. I can't really say. The announcers certainly agreed with the referee. So, perhaps he was right. But I actually felt even worse for the opponent because he was just standing around there. You know, it's a close match and he's ready to go and he's got to stand there for 5 minutes while Steiger runs around, complaining. And I'm sure it broke Steiger's rhythm, but I'm sure it also broke his opponent's rhythm too. So, But Steger eventually did come out of that match victorious. Seven games. But now that I mentioned the service, how did you feel about, you know, this is, seems like a contentious issue that people complain about pros not serving legally. I mean, what's your take on it? Did you notice? Was it really outrageous or not noticeable? Or what do you think the effect is that are people serving legally enough?
It comes down to the umpire at the time is kind of my experience, I suppose. It's very, very subjective, you know, who's umpiring the game and what their thoughts are. Like, I thought a lot of services were illegal that didn't get called, like just no game in particular, just across the entire tournament, a lot of matches that I watched.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it just comes down to who's in the umpire's chair at the time. And I mean, like, I don't know, I suppose we can maybe comment on it in our own games as well. Like, have you ever been faulted for a serve that you thought was completely legal when you play?
Well, I particularly make sure my serves are absolutely legal. So I've never, well, you know, especially in the U.S., we rarely, if ever, have, especially at, you know, my level, I never have any referees or umpires at my matches. Do you? In Australia, is that common?
Yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah, I mean, we usually get just another player who's sitting off to umpire our club matches and that. And it just depends on, you know, who they are. And even the player that you're playing might complain about your service being illegal, you know, even though you're not deliberately trying to, you know, be deceptive or anything like that. And sometimes, you know, I guess when you're at your club, you know, you're amongst friends and that, and they don't call you out on a service. That you know, you go to a tournament, you know, someplace else, and they call you out, and you know.
Yeah, people can get used to bad behavior, but so have you been called out for a service for kind of breaking the rules there on service?
Yeah, at my club a couple of times. Yeah, because it's really frustrating because I spend a lot of time practicing my service, and you know, you practice it for such a long time, and no one says anything,
uh-huh.
And so you assume that everything's fine, and you know, you're doing things by the rules, and then someone says something, you know, in the middle of a match, you know, and
right.
Especially if it's a close match, it really puts you off. You know, it's a bit upsetting.
Yeah, it's very disturbing either way, and. You know, at least in the U.S., like I said, for the majority of matches, unless like a finals match or between very good players, we don't have any umpires refs. So we're actually on our own. We're just going to call our own opponent out. So I've done it maybe, you know, a few times. You know, maybe I can remember two or three matches in the past 3 years when it's really kind of egregious. And I feel it really is like a advantage, like people serving out of their hand. And usually they oblige. So, yeah, it's an issue, and I agree with you. I think overall, I think a lot of pros just serve illegally. I mean, it's a lot of tossing. You know, you can see where their hand is, where they hold the ball, and it's kind of, a lot of times they hold the ball near the center line, but when they make contact with the ball, you know, they're all the way there at the corner. So
I definitely agree with that. Yeah, I've seen a lot of that. Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen. I know people always discuss this, whether the rules should change or, I don't know, or referees just have to be more stringent on enforcing the rules. But, I don't see anything changing besides having these kind of random, like you said, what umpire you get and whether they call it or not.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, how can a guy get through an entire tournament without being faulted and then get faulted in a semi-final or something like that? You know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But that didn't happen in this tournament, I don't think, but in previous ITTF tournaments, I've seen it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. There's very little consistency. So, and I guess can't blame the pros. They're going to try to get away with it as much as they can. I guess that's just how it is.
Yeah. The latest I've heard on the service rule is that you're going to have to serve in front of your body now, which is going to make backhand serves much more common again. I don't know. That probably won't stop, you know, not throwing directly upwards, which is what we were just discussing just then.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it'll stop kind of the, you know, the ball being blocked by a hand or a shoulder on the ball toss, you know, on the way down, something like that.
Yeah, that still happens plenty of times. That'd be interesting to see. As most people are still used to doing kind of forehand dominated serves. So let's go on to the fourth round, and this is where I think we get a lot of the the really big, big matches. Wang Hao played Ru Sung Min. Wang Hao, of course, the number one seed against Ru Sung Min from Korea, 13th. And that went seven games. I was pretty close. I was very impressed. I expected Wang Hao to kind of maybe win that a little more convincingly. But it was a good showing by Ru Sung Min. Fortunately, I think the seventh game, kind of Wang Hao just dominated that one. And I gotta admit, I'm always rooting for the underdog, so unfortunately, Ru did not pull that off. Also, Jun Mitsutani, from Japan, of course, he beat Eijin Madonna, who I also kind of root for Eijin Madonna, except against William Hensel, don't get me wrong. And then there's Ma Long, who, coming in seated fifth, beat Oh Sang-un, and he won that one 4-0. Pretty convincing, And then Ma Lin, coming in seated fourth, he beat Steger 4-0. Zhang Jike, who was seated third, he beat Yu Se-hook 4-0. Did you get to see any of those matches I mentioned? I'm sorry.
No, I didn't get to see any of those ones, actually.
Yeah, I did see a little bit of Wang Hao. Well, I did see the Wang Hao Ru Sung Min match. I watched a little bit of the Zhang Jike versus Chu Se-hook 4-0, and so I thought about it. I mean, I find it very entertaining to see different styles and to see, especially Chu Se-hook, who's very entertaining, and like I mentioned earlier, Jonas, both who chop with their backhands primarily and then attack with their forehands. But I was wondering, can that style really be successful? I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, well, that's definitely a style that I like to watch. But some, going back to a point that my coach has made, you know, defenders do kind of rely on attackers, you know, misreading the spin that they put on the ball and things like that. And at the top, like at the very top level, that just happens less and less.
Yeah,
but exactly. but as I said again before, and something else that he said is that you never win a world championships without having to beat a very good chopper. So they're up there and thereabouts, but they don't kind of win that many tournaments.
I forget to
but,
look
but
this
I like
up.
The spectacle though still definitely so
absolutely. I mean, I don't want that style of play to go out, but do you think we'll ever see in the, I don't know, even the next 10, 20 years that we'll see that kind of player take a world championship? I mean, I personally, I can't see it. I mean, the chopping can force errors and can also help them set up to follow up with an offensive shot. But it's just too, you know, at that level, they're so good against the chop that it's not, you know, they're very consistent. I can't see it being effective enough to give them a strong advantage.
Yeah, that's pretty much my thoughts, I think, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the game, and it's, you know, unfortunately, it's not too much success. I Juicy Hook, I thought he did make a final world championship.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? That was quite a few years ago. I can't remember which year now, yeah.
Okay, I couldn't recall. I don't know, was that against Schlager, or was that a different tournament?
Yeah, 2003 does ring a bell. That's when Schlager won it. So maybe he made the final.
Was that
I'm not
it?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I wasn't sure about that. All right. And then another match which I was thrilled by, and you probably yourself as well. Wang Lichin, coming in seated ninth, beat Zhu Xin, who was seated sixth, and he beat him 4-1. And I honestly, I mean, like I said, I was rooting for Wang Lichin, but I felt Zhu Xin was on a roll, playing very strongly. I thought he would have taken this rather easily. And Wang Lichin came in, and he looked very strong. He looked in control almost the entire time.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, Zhu Xin, he lost the third set after being 6-2 up, and then I think in the fourth again he was 5-2 up, and just his body language when he lost a point, even though when he was that far in front, he was like really, you know, frustrated, and I think that. I don't know whether he was worried, or, you know, or nervous about playing Wang Lichin, but yeah, that's something that definitely struck me watching that match.
Yeah, that's a great point. I forgot about that. Wang Luqin, a few times when he was down, and I don't know about you, I thought, oh no, this game, he's probably not going to get this game. But he made a comeback and would take those games, and I was very impressed. And I guess Wang Luqin has built up a reputation for being just a strong tournament player now, just mentally, you know, focused, I guess, in those situations. So I thought that was very impressive. And like you mentioned, Zhu Zhen, who looked, you know, like you said, the body language, he looked frustrated, and sometimes he, I don't know how to explain it, didn't look like he was, like, exactly confident, you know, as the game wore on, he didn't look exactly confident, like he thought he could come back or he could take it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I wonder if it's maybe because, like, I think Luqin played, he played pretty well, like mixing up his short game and stuff like that, and you know, got himself some opening opportunities, and also found ways to kind of get into Zhu Xin's backhand. Like a couple of times, I saw him do something like he looked like he was going to go down the line after hitting a couple into Zhu Xin's backhand, which Zhu Xin was playing a forehand in the backhand corner.
Mm-hmm.
So Zhu Xin would move over to play the what he thought was coming wide to his forehand,
mm-hmm.
but it would come back to his backhand corner again, and he would have to play a backhand. And that's when, you know, that's what Wang Luqin, I think, was trying to do most of the match, play into his backhand. And when he got there, you know, that was when he won points.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, great point. Yeah, great strategy there by Wang Luqin. And then the next match was Chen Qi, coming in seated 12th, and he beat Samsonov, who's seated 8th. He beat him 4-3. Did you get to see this match?
No, I didn't. Go on.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say, I didn't get to see this match. It seems a lot of people thought this was probably one of the better matches, and I did not get the time to catch this one. I will soon. But that went 4-3, and what a lot of people did mention was probably the shot of the tournament. And yeah, you probably did not get to see this, but there was one rally. Chen Qi blasts the shot, of course, and Samsonov kind of barely catches it and just lobs it up there. It's one of those like sky high lobs where it was like a backhand lob, barely catching the ball. And it's one of those lobs, you know, some people will lob it and they feel that they can still keep in the point and maybe try to come back into the point, grab the offense. But this is one of those lobs where you can tell Samsonov really felt he's so out of place. He's just trying to buy some time. And then Chen Qi comes around and does this, I don't know if it's a chop smash or just a side spin smash, but it was a spectacular smash. And it kind of, the angle is almost going towards where the umpire would sit. So you can tell it's a very harsh, you know, steep angle there. Really, really super far out wide. It just absolutely smashes it. Samsonov runs up. He manages to get to the ball and backhand smashes it back. And it was unbelievable. I watched it a few times in a row. I can't help but laugh when I see it. And, you know, I encourage you to check that out. And then anybody else who hasn't seen it, there's a small quick clip of just that single point. And, I gotta agree. Even if I didn't get to see every single point, I can't imagine a better point than that. Spectacular smash by Samsonov. And of course, Samsonov, I also have a soft spot for, you know, being one of the top European players for so long. And he's getting a little older, but, you know, that was a great point. So hopefully people get to check that out.
Yeah, that's on my list now of matches to go back and watch now, along with the Bastian Stieger one you mentioned before. So
yeah,
I'm creating a list of things I have to go back and watch now. So yeah, that's good. And yeah, I hope other people who are listening to this will as well. That'll be really good.
Yeah, yeah. You know, World Championships only come around twice, I mean, every 2 years, so enjoy it while we can. And finally, Timo Boll, coming in ranked second, he had to play Dmitry Ulcharov, a fellow German player. I think Ulcharov is probably the second best player on the German team, and they went 4-2. And I thought that was kind of unfortunate that, considering so many Chinese players, and then you have the two Germans at this round, and they had to play each other. Did you happen to get to see this match?
I didn't get to see it, but I'm wondering how many Germans were in the main draw, in like each half of the main draw at all, so that, I mean, it is unfortunate they had to play each other, but like in the other half of the draw, Germans might have had to play each other if they'd made it past some of the Chinese players as well at the same stage. We might have seen a German versus German matchup in the other half. So, good question. I didn't actually see the match. Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw a little bit of it, and it seemed, you know, it was close at times, but you can tell Timo Boll felt, you know, certainly stronger. The announcers mentioned how Boll and Ultraoff are actually, you know, of course they're teammates, but they're actually pretty good friends too. And Ultraoff would travel over to Timo Boll city to do some training before the World Championships came up. So I thought, you know, it's kind of a shame. Some people kind of commented that Boll was lucky with his draw. I guess for one part, he got to this far of the round where there's a Chinese player in every single match, almost every single match, and Timo Boll did not have to play a Chinese player. But, you know, Timo Boll is coming in ranked second. It's not like he's, you know, he's supposed to have a good draw. And it's not like anyone did any kind of rigging of the draw. It's they're seeded by their ranking, so there's really nothing to it. And it's just whether you're, you know, maybe he was fortunate. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think Timo Boll was a little bit fortunate getting the draw he had?
Well, I didn't exactly read the discussion that said he got a favorable draw, but I mean, I'm sure he's had tough draws at other tournaments. So it's just. Well, I guess as I say, it's the luck of the draw. I don't really know what else to say. You seem to know a bit more about how the draw is decided than me. I don't sort of pay attention to that a lot.
Yeah, I think it's just the normal how most brackets are set up, where one and two are supposed to meet in the finals. So, you know, at the very first round, number one will play the 128th player, and then number two will play the 127th player, and that's how the draw progresses. So. You know, there's nothing to it. Not like anyone did Timo favors or specifically, you know, they just go by their rankings. So, but at the same time, I felt, you know, maybe it was a tiny bit fortunate that he didn't have to face another Chinese player early on. Although I think he could have done just as well. Who's to say Timo lost to, Zhang Jike, later on and went on to win the championship. So we can't really complain about that.
Yeah, and I mean he had to play Chen Qi as well, which was the first Chinese player he had to play. Like, that's not an easy game for him, I don't think, because I think I heard that they were 50-50 the last maybe you know, few encounters that they've had. So, you know, it really was a coin flip sort of situation there.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. That brings us to the fifth round. So that wraps up this episode. Like I mentioned earlier, we had a pretty long discussion, a lot to cover concerning the World Table Tennis Championships, so I decided to split it up into two episodes, and the next one should be coming out very soon. And in that one, we will continue our discussion of the fifth round, which is basically the quarterfinals, all the way to the finals. And we also follow up the World Table Tennis Championships and basically our thoughts on the future. Based on the results we saw from the World Table Tennis Championships, does it change anything? Was this the last chance for some of the older veterans of the sport at a title? So be sure to check that out. That episode, like I said, will be coming out soon, part two of the World Table Tennis Championships wrap-up. And again, I want to thank Jackson Maine for co-hosting that with me. And you can check out his podcast at primetimepingpong.com. Just a reminder, if you want to keep up with the podcast and be alerted whenever a new episode comes out, you can subscribe to the show through email, RSS, or iTunes. And there's a link near the top of the page at thepongcast.com, thepongcast.com. And you can do all that there. And finally, I'd like to hear your feedback. So if you have any comments, questions, show ideas, recommendations on people you'd like to hear me interview, or an event to promote, you can email me at thepongcast@gmail.com. That's thepongcast@gmail.com. Follow the show on Twitter, @thepongcast. There's also a Facebook page. Just search for The Pongcast. Pretty simple. And if you happen to stop by there at the Facebook page, maybe you can like it. If I get enough likes, I just need to grab that Facebook URL, so that'll help me out, if you know what I'm talking about. And also, if you happen to listen to the show through iTunes, subscribe through iTunes, you can also leave a review there, rate it. And finally, tell your friends, tell your clubmates, and I'll see you next time.